just one in the cart.
Right now,
Senate Agriculture and Veterans Committee will come to order.
Okay.
First bill up today is Senator Kubley's bill at Senate File 3165. Senator Kubley.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You know, there is an A1 amendment. It doesn't look like we have a quorum yet, Mr. Chair.
Well,
should we just talk about the bill? Or?
Yeah, Senator Kubley, I want to just talk about the bill because a lot of things are going on today and we want to be out of here in 2 hours at the most. So.
Very good, Mr. Chair. Well, the bill, you know, deals with the practice of chiropractic as it relates to animals and the training that is needed in order to get there. There are a number of witnesses here today, Mr. Chair and members, and I think they could probably tell the story of why they feel this is needed better than I can. And so I'd like to defer to my first witness on my left today, Mr. Chair, and he can give you his name for the record and also give you his reasons for supporting the passage of this bill.
Welcome to the committee and state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Jim Hulbert, and I am a breeder of purebred canines, Cairn Terriers, the Toto dogs. And my testimony deals with my role as a breeder trying to find animal chiropractic services in Minnesota. Okay. Mm-hmm. I am here today in support of SF 3165, a bill to permit licensed doctors of chiropractic who have completed an additional 210-hour course of study approved by the American Veterinary Chiropractic Association to provide animal chiropractic care in Minnesota. SF 3165 and its companion, HF 3584, will legalize and regulate chiropractic-provided animal chiropractic care in Minnesota. This bill is modeled after legislation that has been proven very successful in the state of Oklahoma. This bill also reflects the recommendations of the Minnesota Department of Agriculture's Animal Husbandry Working Group. The working group, including one chiropractic physician and four practicing veterinarians and professors of veterinary medicine, met for several months last year, last fall, and sent its recommendations to the legislature, including its support for open access to animal chiropractic, that is, care, animal chiropractic care, not requiring a visit to or depending on a referral from a veterinarian. This bill deals only with a doctor of chiropractic's legal permission to provide chiropractic services to animals. Over 1,000 citizens from almost every district in the state have gone on record to indicate that they believe the current law needlessly restricts animals' access to safe and effective chiropractic care and obstructs the owner's right to choose preferred health care for his or her animal. Less than 2% of Minnesota's veterinarians, about 30 of the approximately 2,200, are trained to provide animal chiropractic. The remaining 98% of the Minnesota's veterans or veterinarians do not have chiropractic training and specialized knowledge presented in the 210-hour course to provide chiropractic services to the animals. There are now an estimated 2.9 million dogs, cats, and horses currently living in Minnesota, and since current statutes have provided them only 30 chiropractically trained veterinarians, each domestic animal in Minnesota now shares its chiropractor, its animal chiropractor, with over 97,000 other domestic animals. A few years ago, this is what got me interested. A few years ago, I tried to locate a chiropractic care on referral, on recommendation from my veterinarian, for one of my dogs with severe back pain. I was told, after calling around to several clinics, I was told that I would have an appointment. I could have an appointment in about a month. There are simply not enough chiropractically trained veterinarians accessible under the current law to meet the existing and anticipated demand. Mr. Chairman, I need to emphasize that this bill will add trained and skilled animal chiropractors to Minnesota's animal health care system, not weekend wonders. Licensed chiropractic physicians have already over 3 years of clinical training. The doctors who also make the commitment to successfully complete one of the 210-hour program specified in the statute, first of all, will provide state-of-the-art animal chiropractic care, and two, will be prepared, amply prepared, to recognize conditions, including zoonotic conditions, that is, diseases that are transferable to humans, that require referral to laboratory analysis and to veterinary care. Modern chiropractors are trained to treat their human patients or to refer them to other providers when appropriate as members of a healthcare team. They are prepared to collaborate with veterinarians as well. This bill will promote strong working relationships between doctors of veterinary medicine and doctors of chiropractic. In fact, the bill before you specifies that every registered animal chiropractor in Minnesota will provide copies of clinical diagnostic and treatment notes to his or her human clients upon request and to the animal patient's veterinarian. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, please support SF-3165 as amended, to allow licensed and registered chiropractic physicians to provide Minnesota's animal owners open access to chiropractic care. Thank you.
Any questions? Senator Kubley, you know we can't act on any amendments till I get a quorum, so let's just proceed with the testimony.
Yeah, that'll be fine, Mr. Chair. The next witness is Denise Rivard.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Denise Rivard. I've been in the training, equine management, and rehabilitation business for over 30 years. My priority is the overall health and well-being of the animals. Today's expensive performance horses need to be treated like the professional athletes that they are and provide for them all the sports medicine that is available, and in my opinion, chiropractic is at the top of the list. Countless cases have been brought to me from frustrated owners that have spent thousands of dollars on injections, medications, and even surgery, trying to figure out what is wrong with their horse, only to find out that an inexpensive chiropractic adjustment was what was needed to get their horse on the road to recovery. A typical lameness exam with a vet can cost upwards of $1,000 or more, and it would be a shame if people had to spend this much money up front just to obtain a referral to a chiropractor. People want the best care for these animals, and without it costing them so much that they can no longer afford to care for them or even own them.
Any questions? Not Senator Kubley, your next witness.
Okay, the next witness is Annie Seafeld from the Animal Chiropractic Care.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Annie Seafeld. I am soon to graduate from Northwestern Health Sciences University as a doctor of chiropractic. I am also in the animal chiropractic program at Healing Oasis in Sturtevant, Wisconsin. I made the decision to change careers and become a chiropractor when I saw what chiropractic care did for my dog. But I come to you today as a pet owner. When my dog Deke was 15 years old, she suddenly lost the control of her hind limbs. I brought her to my veterinarian, who was unable to help her. I told my vet that I wanted to bring Deke to a chiropractor. She said, "I don't know that chiropractic will help her." Of course, she didn't know. Her training as a veterinarian never exposed her to chiropractic diagnosis or treatment. Thankfully, I thought differently and wasted no time finding a chiropractor to work with Deke. After just two adjusting sessions, Deke's control of her hind limbs was completely restored. The results were remarkable and immediate. It is my hope that all of Minnesota's animals will have reasonable access to the same happy outcome that Deke enjoyed. She and the people represented here by nearly 1,000 letters, emails, and petition signatures who share our sentiments are why I have come before you today. You may hear opinions today that support veterinary referral requirement before a consumer can seek chiropractic care for their animals. There does not seem to be a logical reason to institute a statewide veterinary referral requirement for chiropractic care when 98% of Minnesota's veterinarians have not had chiropractic training. This would likely prevent animals from getting the care they need, as it would have in my dog's case. I would also like to state that in some states where veterinary referral requirements are in place, there is growing public dissatisfaction. Consumer groups have been formed in Florida, Illinois, New Jersey, North Carolina, and Alberta, Canada, with the sole purpose of granting animal owners the right to choose the kind of health care they want for their pets. These are just the instances I am aware of, and there may be more. Oklahoma, the state whose legislation that this bill is modeled from, has reported to us that there have been no challenges to their standing statute and rule, and this is evidenced by a letter that you have in your packets. I'd also like to state that the Minnesota Board of Chiropractic Examiners has indicated that they have no objection to the provision of services to animals by specially trained chiropractors and stands ready to work with the Minnesota Veterinary Board to promulgate relevant rules. The animal owners of Minnesota should have quality assured, logistically reasonable, and affordable access to chiropractic care for their animals. We are asking that you give them the right to choose their portal of entry health care provider, a right that they already have for themselves and their human children. The bill before you is based on much knowledge and experience. It meets the needs of Minnesota's animals and their owners, who I am here to represent. I urge you to support SF 3165 and vote for its passage to the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Seafeld, did you have the referral then when you went to the chiropractor with your dog?
No, I did not.
Did your chiropractor hesitate to treat your dog without the referral?
I take my animals to a chiropractor. She's a Minnesota chiropractor who practices on animals in Wisconsin, where it is legal for her to do so. And I'd like to report, too, that that chiropractor has a very busy practice in Wisconsin, and 80% of her patients are Minnesota residents crossing the border to obtain the service in Wisconsin where they can access it legally.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, Senator Kubley. Do you have anybody else?
Well, I know there are some others who would like to testify in opposition to the bill, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Pierce Fleming. I'm a small animal practitioner from New Hope. I'm also certified in animal chiropractic. I have been for 7 years, so I have some knowledge of the education process. Our primary point of contention is that veterinarians should not be taken out of the animal health care process, that when veterinarians are not involved, the animal care can suffer. With the program, the amount of education that chiropractors get as far as diseases that can cause problems in animals, typically about 10% of the time in that program is related to chiropractors getting education as far as all the diseases and comparative anatomy, learning the anatomy of horses and dogs. And that's about 20 hours of that 210 hours. And to say
I'm going to have to interrupt just for a second because I've got a quorum and people are moving back and forth. So let's record show a quorum is present. I'll go ahead.
To say that veterinary chiropractors can learn all the different diseases and rule outs in 20 hours that it takes veterinarians 4 years to learn, I just don't think is a valid point. And so as far as the states in the union here, when we're talking about referral to requiring referral, because that's basically what we're talking about here is requiring a veterinarian makes referral, not necessarily that an animal or a client would have to go to a veterinarian, but that they would get a referral from somebody who is familiar with that animal. I know that there is a shortage of animal chiropractors. I know that animal chiropractic can do good for animals. I have seen it just like the chiropractor, just like these people who are testifying here too. But I just feel that that is important to not discount the veterinarian from this process here. The doctors of chiropractic cannot take x-rays, cannot run lab work, and other ways that we are going to try to figure out what problems are with these animals. It's not just, we're not just talking about pain, but we're talking about ability to differentiate diseases, such as trying to differentiate a chiropractic problem from laminitis or a disc problem from degenerative myelopathy. These are conditions that can happen in these animals, and without the proper background, you can overlook and try to treat things that that are either false or can actually cause harm with the animal. So, as veterinarians here, I mean, half of the states in the country don't even allow chiropractors to do any training or any practice on animals, and another quarter will allow it with direct supervision. But all we're asking for is what's considered indirect supervision here. And indirect supervision just would require a referral, not necessarily a visit to the veterinarian, but a referral from a veterinarian to a qualified animal chiropractor.
Mr. Scogan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Fleming, I'm having a little trouble understanding how you might give a referral without first having a visit.
Well, I have, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Senator Scogan, I have lots, I've been practicing for 30 years. I have a lot of clients who I know these clients, I know these animals. And so if I had a problem that, well, for one thing, if a good client comes to me and would just say, I'd like a referral. You know, we've been dealing with this kind of problem, this problem with this animal, or things aren't getting better, and I would like to see a, I'd like you to make me a referral to a animal chiropractor or a doctor of chiropractic. I would have no problem with that as long as I had a relationship with that client. What the way this bill is written, the way is that chiropractors would have to would not be required to a referral, but they would send out a letter to the doctor who is the veterinarian for that animal. But what I could see happening is the veterinarian would get a letter about a problem that was seen by a chiropractor, but they have no idea what the problem was initially. And there's always many rule-outs to these different things. It's not... chiropractic is one facet of it, but you have to look at the whole animal as to what can be causing these individual problems. It's not just pain. It's not just musculoskeletal things.
Senator Coobley, I'm going to go to you for your amendment to get the bill in order that you like, and then I'll come back to you, Senator Hine.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, I would move that the A1 amendment to Senate File 3165, or that Senate File 3165 be amended with the A1 amendment.
Everybody understand? I think copy's been out to everybody. Okay. Senator Coogan moves adoption as A1 amendment. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Now your bill should be in order that you would like, Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, Doctor, if I had an animal that I wanted to take to see a chiropractor, I'm still not quite clear in my mind why anybody would do that, but I don't claim any expertise in these things. But if I did, and so I call on a veterinarian, I said, I want to take my animal to a chiropractor, which is, I guess, the current practice, current structure. And the veterinarian says, no, I don't think you should do that, or I'm not going to give it. What then do I do under the current structure if I wanted to do that and I can't get a veterinarian to make a referral? Then what happens?
Well, either you would find another veterinarian. Currently, at the way the law stands right now, chiropractors are not allowed to practice on animals. So there are ways around that. Lots of times the conversation I would think would go, well, what's wrong with your animal first, and let's explore that. And does it sound like this might be an issue that an animal chiropractor could help, or does this sound like some other kind of a problem, like Lyme disease, which can show up as a pain kind of a situation here, too, and you need to run blood tests to check on Lyme disease.
And Mr. Chairman, Doctor, I appreciate you that that's probably what should happen or ought to happen is that conversation, but there may be, for whatever reason, people that don't want to take their animal to the vet. I'm trying to make this analogy in the human world. People see physicians, but some people don't like to see physicians. They like to go to chiropractors or vice versa. We don't currently require that to see a chiropractor, you have to get a referral from a physician to do that. I'm just wondering, why wouldn't that same kind of analogous relationship exist in this world where you've got people that say, well, I don't want to take my dog to the vet. I want to take him to the chiropractor. Why can't I just do that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nahan, the difference between that is in human, the doctors of chiropractic are learned in human medicine. So for them, they have studied, they know the anatomy, they know physiology of humans. In animals, every species is different. The anatomy is different in every species. They do not have the training. So that's the difference with that argument, is that they have spent hours on human anatomy and physiology. But that does not always translate over to horses are different than dogs, are different than cats. And to learn all that, you can't do that in 20 hours, know all the diseases, know all the anatomy, and be able to make diagnoses. We're not, so we are not saying no to chiropractors. All we're saying is that this should be a partnership, and to take veterinarians out of it altogether is not in the best interest of the animal.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Fleming, I guess you mentioned that, a doctor of chiropractic may not recognize diseases that need to be treated by a veterinarian, but wouldn't the reverse also be true, that most veterinarians, unlike yourself, have not had chiropractic training? So what would lead you to believe that the average veterinarian could make a diagnosis of a problem that an animal has that needs chiropractic care?
Mr. Chair, I don't disagree with that statement, but I think it's putting the cart before the horse. I think a veterinarian has had 4 years of school to try to differentiate what diseases are. And so you have a whole lot more when you're talking about, actually when we're talking about alternative, we're talking about holistic medicine. It's looking at the whole animal, not just the musculoskeletal system, not just spinal adjustment. We have to look at everything, blood pressure, heart, lab work, x-rays. And that's not to say that this has to be done every time, but to say that a veterinarian can't recognize chiropractic, I would agree with that statement, but I think still the primary care of that animal, the best one to make a diagnosis of an animal is going to be a veterinarian. And then if a veterinarian can't figure out what problems are, again, I think the two should go hand in hand. But a good veterinarian would be open to having a chiropractor involved in evaluation if they are not making a diagnosis or seeing the treatment response that they wish.
Senator Dale.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I'd like to ask Dr. Fleming just to make sure I understood what he was saying. I think what you mentioned was that if we pass this bill the way it is, it would be there's only one other state out of the 50 states that have the same direct access that this bill has, and that would be the state of Oklahoma. And I think you mentioned that one half of the states have no access at all so chiropractors can work on animals. And one-fourth of the states have direct supervision of a veterinarian required to do the chiropractic work. And then if you had indirect supervision, how many states have that?
I would say that about the other quarter.
Okay, so one-fourth have indirect supervision of a veterinarian so that there's some relationship there between the chiropractor and the veterinarian, but there's only one other state in the whole country right now that has the same system that is being proposed in this bill. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dill, or the testifier, and I'm sorry I didn't catch your name.
Dr. Fleming.
To Senator Dill's point, can you tell me, Oklahoma, I think you said, was a state that has this. Can you tell me, have there been incidents in Oklahoma that you can relate that this caused a problem, the direct access without the veterinary contact? Is there something showing up in Oklahoma with this practice that's a problem?
Mr. Chair, no. I none that I know of. I have no experience with Oklahoma.
Mr. Chair, sure. Senator Dill,
Senator Coogley, maybe we should hear from the other two gentlemen, and then we'll come back.
That'll be fine, Mr. Chair. Dr. Howell will be next.
Mr. Chair, Senators, my name is Dr. John Howell. I'm a mixed animal practitioner in Grand Rapids, Minnesota, and I'm the immediate past president of the Minnesota Veterinary Medical Association. I have no objections to chiropractors working on animals, never have, but I can't see any way that it could be good without a referral or some direct relationship. I can see a great working relationship if veterinarians refer to chiropractors. How many of us have gone to chiropractors our whole life? We know the benefit of chiropractic medicine. But there are so many diseases that we need to rule out first, or we need to make sure that it's not a contagious, infectious. I can give you an example. I had a client come into me 4 weeks ago. And she had been to her chiropractor, and this is not to say anything bad about chiropractors. This is the story I'm about to tell you. It happens to MDs all the time as well. But she went to her chiropractor, who a lady just came out of the chiropractor's room, and she had a bandage around her neck. And the chiropractor said, "Are you still dealing with that?" And she said, "Yes." And she left, and this gal went in the room, got treated. A couple days later, she started noticing some scabs on her body and some sores. And within 2 weeks, her husband had it. And after they both had it, their kids got it, and then their dog and their cat got it. And she went to her physician, who sent her to a dermatologist, who told her she was probably neurotic, which wasn't a very intelligent thing to say. He thought she was just neurotic and picking herself. She went back to her physician. She brought in some scotch tape. With that, when she'd feel a bite, she'd touch it with scotch tape, run it in. Well, they threw it in the garbage. She came to see me because her dogs and cats were scratching. So we looked at, she gave me a scotch tape of something that she'd gotten from herself, and there was a partial skeleton of a scabies mite. Now, there's several forms of scabies. That's just a mite that affects dogs and cats or humans. There's one that prefers humans but will bite dogs and cats, and that's what this one was. So we started treating her dogs and cats. I told her to tell her physician what I found, and he said, "Oh, my goodness, I probably should have sent you to a veterinarian right off the bat." And he started treating her with a drug so the whole family could get cured of scabies, which is a very infectious, contagious disease. Now, in dogs and cats, it can look like little tiny scabs and sores. It can look no different than a dog with allergies or a dog that gets bitten by gnats or black flies in the summer. That's just one little example. Then fleas. I hope that they're going to have a room that's not carpeted when they treat dogs and cats, because they're going to need to, if they get a dog in full of fleas and they're making adjustments, they notice the fleas when they're parting the air in the back. The fleas are going to jump off. They're going to have to treat that room. They're going to probably have to use pyrethrins or something with a quick kill. A lot of people are allergic to pyrethrins. Are they going to be in the same room or the same building, you know, as the animals that are being treated? And do they know all the ins and outs of pyrethrins? In Wisconsin, you have to be licensed to use pesticides. In fact, in Wisconsin, chiropractors that work on animals have to be under the direct supervision of a veterinarian. So that's just another thing. But if they can't take x-rays, I mean, look at the benefit of if we refer it and we send, here's the x-rays, we can put them on digital and the chiropractor can put it in the computer and look at all the x-rays of the back. How can you adjust a dog's back if you don't know that there's discospondylitis or spondylosis, a condition where you got spurs that can be caused from infection, some aren't? There are so many things. Up where we live in Grand Rapids, there's blastomycosis. That's a very serious fungal disease that humans get and animals. You can't catch it directly from the dog, but if the dog has this, he may or may not have a fever. They come in limping on one leg. We don't know what it is till we have to do a blood test and differentiate between Lyme disease, anaplasmosis, and rule those out before we can even tell if it's blastomycosis. That's a very, very serious disease. Those are things that their time is of the essence with those diseases. So if an owner, a client, wants to see the chiropractor first without even ruling the other ones out because they aren't going to be aware of some of those, with time being so important, especially in blasto and some of those, they're dead in 4 days if you don't get them on treatment. So there's a lot of wasted time that would occur where all that could be saved, and the chiropractor could know that he's got a healthy, non-infectious, non-contagious animal to work with. I think that's very, very important that we rule out all the zoonotic things. I know even MDs with skin conditions. I mean, there's rabbit fur mites, and all that looks like is excessive dandruff. Those bite people. You get little tiny sores all over. Cats have it all the time. It's a very common mite. And that'll be on the floor, on the tables. So there's just so many things, I think, that we could benefit the chiropractor by saying, right, here's the patient, with an x-rays, lab test, you got a healthy animal, you know, go to it, make them better. I think I'll just leave it at that. My opinion is very important to have a referral. And I think veterinarians would be more than welcome to refer patients.
Senator Kuba, we have one more gentleman, I think.
Yeah, I think we could hear the other witness before we go to questions, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee and state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Stanley Hild. I'm a veterinarian living in Buffalo, Minnesota. After graduating from the College of Veterinary Medicine at Iowa State University, my career spanned 5 years of teaching clinical medicine and participation in graduate studies at the University of Minnesota College of Veterinary Medicine, followed by nearly 40 years of active mixed veterinary practice in Wright County, Minnesota. I've served as president of the Minnesota Veterinary Medical Association, numerous committees for that organization, and represented Iowa and Minnesota on the American Veterinary Medical Association Executive Board for 6 years, served as chair of that executive board for 1 year, and currently serve on the AVMA Council on Veterinary Services. During the last year, there were several initiatives launched which would affect the delivery of service to the public of complementary and alternative medical services, chiropractic being one of those services. My basic testimony today is not to diminish the respect by the licensed veterinary community for chiropractic, but rather to emphasize the necessity of protection of the animal community and their owners through as much as possible a reasonable assurance of quality diagnosis and treatment of conditions which may respond to this alternative therapy. Chiropractic was one of those that therapies dealt with by the Working Committee on Alternate Therapies put in place in 2007 by the Minnesota Legislature. The recommendations coming forth from this committee, however, were not unanimous and appeared in the committee's report as veterinarians being collectively opposed to the allowance of chiropractic service being provided independently without supervision by licensed veterinarians. This opposition was not an opposition to chiropractic services in general or to licensed human practitioners of chiropractic. However, was a realization that all medical services provided for animals must be under the supervision of licensed veterinarians as a protection for the welfare and safety of the veterinary patient. It follows, of course, that if a licensed veterinarian has undergone the necessary training to be certified as a veterinary chiropractor as a specialty, such as Dr. Fleming, veterinary supervision is automatically in place. Just as there is a client-patient relationship dictated by the principles of ethics in the medical profession, there is a similar but specifically different veterinary client-patient relationship dictated by the principles of veterinary medical ethics laid out by the AVMA, and is also recognized in the Minnesota Veterinary Practice Act. This relationship is one of our ethical concerns, and all the veterinarians who are licensed in Minnesota are aware of the VCPR being the basis for interaction among veterinarians and their clients and their patients. And in order to have that relationship, there are three things that must happen. The veterinarian has assumed responsibility for making clinical judgments regarding the health of the animal or animals and the need for medical treatment, and the client has agreed to follow the veterinarian's instructions. The veterinarian has sufficient knowledge of the animals to initiate at least a general preliminary diagnosis of the medical condition, and this means that the veterinarian has recently seen and personally acquainted with the keeping and care of the animals. Number three, the veterinarian is readily available or has arranged for emergency coverage for follow-up evaluation in the event of adverse reactions or the failure of the treatment regimen. So I think what you're seeing here today is a plea for some cooperation between the chiropractic profession and the veterinary profession. I think it can be a win-win situation as long as there is a spirit of cooperation that is taking place. And as Dr. John has stated, there can often be hidden diagnoses that are going to happen that may not be made aware to the chiropractor who is not familiar with that particular diagnosis. Since there is a significant number of zoonoses or transmissible diseases from animals to man, it would seem to be important for licensed human chiropractors to be aware of the potential public health impact of those diseases being a threat to human patients if animals are routinely treated in a combined human-animal clinic setting. If chiropractic is provided without veterinary supervision, such zoonoses could easily be missed in the haste of an initial chiropractic exam, thus creating the public health threat. And if you could visualize that if the veterinarian is involved in the original referral of this animal, there is no reason that that animal can't be brought back to the veterinarian's facility by the chiropractor to do the treatments that he needs to do to that animal. On Monday, I visited with an influential physician who also holds a chiropractic degree and who serves on the Minnesota Board of Medical Practice. That doctor is well aware of this present initiative on behalf of his profession. I had previous interaction with that doctor in 1994 when this issue was brought up previously. It was reassuring to me that this physician chiropractor agreed with the critical nature of the VCPR and that if licensing is the issue in protecting the patient and the public, a veterinarian should remain in the position of supervision of non-veterinarians offering chiropractic services for animals. In summary, Minnesota law, as stated in the Veterinary Practice Act, specifies that chiropractic can be performed on animals as long as the act remains under the direction and supervision of a licensed veterinarian. I believe that for the above stated reasons, that regulation should remain in the law today as it did in 1994. Thank you for the opportunity to come before you.
Senator Dill.
Mr. Chairman, Dr. Dill.
Mr. Chairman, Dr. Hilder, were you done?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I see Senator Kuba's got one more witness up there. Maybe he should testify first.
That's fine.
Is there any chance I could make one?
Sure.
Mr.
Chair, Senators, I'm sorry. I had forgotten one important point. I just wanted to address that, Senator Hahn, that you brought up, like, about why, you know, if you don't have to get a referral from an MD to go see a chiropractor, we as adult human beings, why in the world do we need to, you know, do you need a veterinary referral to a chiropractor? And I think the biggest issue in that is that a human going to the chiropractor or whatever modality of medicine they're going to, acupuncturist, anything else, we have the ability to say, you know what, we can talk to them. We can tell them, you know, I got a pain in my back. It's kind of deep, maybe where my kidney is, and it hurts when I turn. And the chiropractor and anybody else is going to be able to make a reasonably intelligent decision as to whether or not they think that you need to also see a physician. And because we can speak and we can cover all the things that hurt us, all the areas, what we've had done, what doctor we've been to in the past, they can make that great decision. In veterinary medicine, it's not going to be that way. The dog can't talk. The horse can't talk. We spent years of experience, a lifetime of practice, in learning how to read all these animals' expressions and body language and everything else to know how to make, to even point us in the right direction to get a diagnosis or to ask the pertinent clinical history or medical history of the owner, you know, what has the dog had to eat in the last several days? Did it get into bones? On and on and on. Because the dog can't talk, that's the big difference, I feel, that why a referral is more important. Thank you.
Well, Miss, what? Were there other questions, Mr. Chair?
Senator Kubley, I'm going to ask. Senator Coring, is that kind of in the same line we're talking here?
Well, I guess I just had a, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Just had a question for Senator Kubley. I thought there was a task force that had, you know, it seems like we're rehashing things all over again, which is fine. I guess that's what our job is. But I thought there was a task force of the people that were that are testifying that all agreed to that this bill would be fine. It was kind of a compromise. Am I incorrect in that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Coring, that's correct. There was a task force that operated under the auspices of the Department of Agriculture that put together the recommendations that are found in this bill.
Okay, I guess.
Senator Coring, follow up?
Yeah, well, I guess I'm just a comment, just wondering why we seem to be having people that were probably involved with the task force that now are up to the table when they had a chance to make some changes, now up there objecting when I think we kind of tried to work it out ahead of time. So that's just a comment, I guess.
Senator Wergen.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kubley, I go to the chiropractor once a week, and it's a good thing. I mean, it helps for headaches and stuff like that. I'm having a lot of trouble that the patient ahead of me is going to be an animal laying down on the couch, getting their hip adjusted and rolling over, and then getting the other hip adjusted. I can't quite picture that. But the one thing that does strike me, I'm sorry, I just some pictures there. The one thing that does strike me is that when you talk about a separate space, or when you talk about using the same table or the same equipment for an animal just prior to a human, I'm not sure that that's such a great idea. I mean, my personal preference is that it would be done in a completely separate room. I would hope that that's something you're actually open to, because when that was mentioned, I thought, I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, I don't really want to follow the German Shepherd when I get my neck adjusted, so I think that's something to think about.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah,
thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Wergen. And, you know, in fact, I have an amendment drafted that would meet that would require that there be a separate area where animals are treated apart from the one where humans are treated. I would hope that doctors of chiropractic would follow the same kinds of cleanliness procedures that are followed in any clinic and, you know, go through the scrubbing process that to get rid of any zoonotic disease that might transfer from an animal to a human being or vice versa before they would treat a human patient. You know, I would think that, you know, in some instances it's even going to take place in a separate facility. So, you know, I don't know. I guess, you know, I don't disagree necessarily with the things these men said, but to me it's a choice again. You know, it seems to me that, you know, people, particularly people who breed animals for a living, are probably more acquainted with the ins and outs of their animals than anyone else is. And, you know, I just think they ought to have the options at their disposal that allow them to get the kind of treatment that they feel is important.
Senator Kubley, let's hear from the gentleman on this side, and then I'll come back to Senator Hahn.
That'd be fine, Mr. Chair.
Senator Vickerman, members of the committee, my name is David Coons. I do the lobbying for the Minnesota Chiropractic Association, Northwestern Health Sciences University. There was a agricultural study over at the Department of Health. Many of the members that are here testifying today participated in that study. There were a number of months of meetings. They did deal with all of the issues that you're discussing around the table today. And There was no objection to the course. Matter of fact, they supported the course. It came from veterinary medicine, not chiropractic. Currently, the people that take that course are veterinarians and chiropractors. So they meet the same standards. That course brings the two groups together and facilitates good communications, coordination, and compliance with what they're trying to achieve. That's a positive, and I would hope that's where we go. Over three times during the course of the discussions, the question of direct referral from a veterinarian before service was discussed by the committee, and that was people from the animal husbandry industry as well as veterinary professors from the university and a chiropractor at the table. And each time that was brought up, the recommendation was that there not be a direct referral. It was not needed. So we incorporated that into this legislation. So I don't know what more to say other than we have we put language in the bill that, at just as in human medicine, it's coordination, it's communication with the patient and other practitioners that are dealing with the human or the animal. And that's what we promote in this bill. So, with that, I'd like to have Annie answer the question. We had a question on diseases and training of chiropractors. As I listen to the arguments, I heard the same thing over the years: is you could put medical physician in place of veterinarian and have the same arguments. So.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Annie Seafelt. I would just like to state that the doctors of chiropractic are required by law to recognize conditions that are not chiropractic conditions and are held to the same standard of care as a medical doctor for humans. We take 3 intensive years of study in the biological science, including pathology and infectious disease. What we're recommending in this bill is that only chiropractors that have taken postgraduate education in animal chiropractic be allowed to work with animals. So these individuals not only have gone through the standard training for a doctor of chiropractic, but they've also taken additional training in animal chiropractic, which includes infectious disease, zoonoses, that sort of thing. I'd just like to state that Dr. Charlie Westman, who wanted to be here today to testify but unfortunately is extremely sick with the flu at home, I asked him, out of the 15,000 horses that he has treated over the past 10 years, how many zoonotic diseases have you seen? His answer to me was none. He did report that a couple of times a year he sees a skin fungus or a viral infection. He's seen an instance or two of equine protozoal myeloencephalitis. These are things that we're trained to recognize in the course that I'm attending at the Healing Oasis in Sturdivant, Wisconsin. So we are not trying to send people that are completely unaware out there to deal with animals. If I may, there are a couple of other items that I would like to respond to as well that were stated previously. It was stated that the primary point from the veterinarian standpoint is to not take the veterinarian out of the process. I would just like to point out that the bill before you actually mandates that the chiropractor communicate with the veterinarian after the treatment has been performed, after one treatment has been performed, not after numerous treatments. And that lives up to the final recommendations of the Animal Husbandry Working Group. It was also stated today that the veterinarians of the Animal Husbandry Working Group were collectively opposed to the non-referral. There were 4 veterinarians at the Animal Husbandry Working Group, and 2 of them were in opposition to that. It was truly a minority opinion that was being presented that would absolutely require pre-exam and referral by a veterinarian. There was a document that was referred to today. The AVMA has stated that they believe that there should be a requisite gatekeeper position for veterinarians with anyone providing a therapy to animals. And I would just like to remind the committee that that document was created and adopted by the National Veterinary Trade Association. So there is no surprise that they would require veterinarians to be the requisite gatekeepers. However, that does not respond to the concerns of the citizens of Minnesota, the future consumers of animal chiropractic, who have requested the right to choose, protection of their pocketbooks, and expedient access to chiropractic care when that's needed. And I'm referring to the thousand, almost 1,000 letters, emails, and petition signatures that we have here. The last point that I would like to make is that animals don't have a voice to communicate their symptoms. Chiropractors work with pediatrics daily. We work with developmentally disabled adults daily who are not able to communicate their symptoms either. We're trained very thoroughly in history taking and examination. So thank you very much for your time.
I'm going to go. Senator Wergens, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just following up on my earlier questions. Senator Kubley, seriously, you know, I think back, and there are things like pinworm, ringworm, fleas. They all come to mind immediately as, you know, from animal to human being and being treated in the same space. So while I have no problem with your bill, are you planning at some point to add that it would be separate? My preference would be separate facilities, but at the very least, separate treatment spaces.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Wergen, Senator Marty requested this bill in his committee, and we do have a plan to offer that amendment there.
Thank you, Senator Kubley.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess I'd like to ask the veterinarians. I think many of the issues that have been raised seem to me that the marketplace could take care of those. As a human, I wouldn't go to a chiropractor unless I knew for sure that where I was going was not also being used to treat animals. I guess that would be sort of incumbent on me to do that. And I think some of the other things you mentioned that are problems, I agree, but it seems like if those things manifest themselves, then people would make different choices, or they would act differently, or they would adjust. But earlier there was testimony from a woman who said that if you took a horse to a vet to do, I think she said, a lameness analysis or diagnosis, it would cost $1,000. And it seems like part of the dispute here is has to do with the costs and who gets to decide what the treatment is, whether it was the individual animal owner or a veterinarian. And I'm just wondering, is there a willingness on the part of the veterinarians to do something like, well, if someone is coming and essentially wants to be referred, that there would be no fee for the visit, so that if they just want a referral, that we'd do some kind of examination and refer them? Or if you have to pay a $1,000 fee and then get a referral, I don't know if that's true or not, that was a testimony, I think that would be a little bit troubling. So I'm still wrestling with this a little bit, and I understand there is a desire to cooperate, and I think that is true on both sides, but I don't know that if we put the shoe on the other foot and said that the veterinarian could be seen only after a animal chiropractor had made the recommendation, I don't imagine that veterinarians would be very happy with that structure either. So it seems to me there has to be some way to accommodate this in some way. But anyway, just could you talk about the $1,000 fee, and is that realistic? Is that part of the problem here, is it's money?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hahn, I'm a small animal practitioner, but I would be very surprised if getting an examination costs $1,000. That seems, it could, if you want to take x-rays and do many things, it could work up to it, but an examination of a horse is not going to cost $1,000. I can't speak to horses. I'm a small animal. It's not going to cost that at my clinic. The one thing that I would like to speak to is I was part of that animal husbandry working group, and there, just to comment on Senator Kubley's statement, there was not agreement there, and individual members were not polled to get numbers of those who were for or against, and there are specific official dissents. If you read through that that document, there are official dissents on. That was the goal, was trying to have an agreement between, but we did not reach that.
Senator Dale.
Mr. Chairman, members, on that point, I've got a copy of the Animal Husbandry Working Group findings right here, and on the recommendation about whether there should be direct access or referral by a veterinarian, there is a clear comment here that there was some official dissent registered on this recommendation, and the vote is not split out. I mean, there was no vote, but it was not a unanimous decision or recommendation. Mr. Chairman, if it's all right, I'd like to offer the A2 amendment, which deals with some of the issues we've just been talking about. And Senator Kubley had earlier offered an amendment that made some technical changes and a few other changes, and my amendment does some of the same things he does, so there, I do need to delete one line on my amendment, and that's line 1.2. which does the same thing that Senator Kubley's amendment does on lines 1.4 and 1.5. So I would like to offer the A2 amendment except for line 1.2. And this amendment does add at the bottom of page 1 the language that says, and the animal has been referred to the chiropractor by a veterinarian. Now, I want to remind the committee what Dr. Fleming had earlier reported. Mr. Chairman, may I explain the amendment?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay. This is kind of a compromise amendment, because right now we have no legal authority in the state of Minnesota for a human chiropractor to work on animals. A veterinarian with chiropractic training can do it, but not a chiropractor. So that's the way it is in one half of the states in this country. And then we've got the Oklahoma option, which is what we have before us, where there's direct access to chiropractors, and that's the only state in the union that has that. And we're going to add to that. Now, in between those two levels, there's another one-fourth of the states have a requirement that a chiropractor can work on animals, but they have to be under the direct supervision of a veterinarian. And then the next step down from that is indirect supervision by a veterinarian, which is really what this referral thing is all about, and that's what one-fourth of the states roughly have. So I think rather than go from no legal authority for chiropractors to work on animals down to direct access is a big jump, but I would suggest we cut it kind of in between with indirect supervision or requiring referral by a veterinarian, and that's what this amendment does.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, it seems to me that, you know, I would go back to the comment that I made earlier that most veterinarians in the state aren't going to recognize any need for chiropractic care any more than chiropractors might recognize a need for veterinary care, and I would oppose the amendment on that basis alone. And yet, you know, it seems to me that the owner of an animals are chattel property in an agricultural setting, you know, and they're clearly perceived as property in other settings. It seems to me that an animal owner ought to have the discretion of seeking the treatment that it wants for their own animals.
Senator Coyne.
Mr. Chairman, a question to Senator Dill. So an animal has to be referred to a chiropractor by a veterinarian. So if I take my dog, I got to go to the veterinarian first, then I can go to the chiropractor. What if I want to go back a second or a third or a fourth time? Do I have to go to the veterinarian every single time? Or it's once I go one time, that's it?
There you go.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Coring, I would say that once you go and get the chiropractic issue settled, that's fine. But then 5 years later, when you have another episode where your dog goes lame or has pain or something, you really need to go back to the veterinarian to see what he says about it, what he thinks the diagnosis is before you go back to the chiropractor a second time.
Senator Coring.
And so then Mr. Chairman, and in my question to the gentleman who has, and I apologize for not knowing your name, the somebody had the small animal practice. How much is if I brought my dog Tipper, which no relation to Tipper Gore, but it's got a white tip on the end of her tail. That's why I call her Tipper. Anyway, so if I bring my dog to the small animal practice, how much is it going to cost me to bring the dog in and to have the veterinarian look the dog over and do a referral? How much would that cost me at your clinic, if I may ask that, or whoever's clinic?
Sure. Mr. Chair, I'm Dr. John Howe in Grand Rapids, Minnesota, mixed animal practice. An office visit, a basic office visit at our practice is $39.50. And just in reference to one other point that was made, I'm also a member of the American Association of Equine Practitioners and the Minnesota Association of Equine Practitioners. We work on horses also. And I've never done a lameness exam in my life that ever came, with x-rays included, that ever came to over $250. So I'm sure you can get a $1,000 lameness exam, but that might take, that would be x-raying every limb up and down and 4 hours of watching it run and under saddle and everything else. So that's not a real figure, I don't believe, for typical lameness exams, and at least in Minnesota.
Well, I would just, if I could just say one other thing, I would just say that when I was milking cows, and I sold my cows in November of 2000, that's been a little while ago, the veterinarian would, every time he came for one of my cows, it was usually $150 to $200, and I don't know how much it would be now, so it's expensive.
Well, Senator Corey, maybe you had a lot of sick cows.
No.
I shouldn't have said that. Just jokingly.
And then I started to treat them, Mr. Chairman, I started to treat them on my own. I don't know, Senator Dill, if that was the right thing. For like milk fever, I'd do that myself. I don't know if that was legal but sometimes you got to do that. So enough of that.
Senator Wergen, do you have a question?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Cooley again. The separation of humans and animals got to happen. But when I look at this, I keep going back to the thought that, number one, this is my dog. It's an animal. It's not my child. It's not a human. There is a difference. I love dogs too, but there's a difference. And furthermore, it's my dog. And so why shouldn't I be able to take my dog to a chiropractor if I want to? Why should I have to spend my money to go to a veterinarian first if I just want to take my dog to the chiropractor? I'm having a hard time separating why I can't have control of my own animal. I'm not beating it. I'm actually wanting to help it.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Wergen, I couldn't agree more. Thank you.
We have before us, members, Senator Dill's Amendment A-2. Concentrate on the amendment. Any further discussion? Senator Dill, do you want to move your...
Yeah, I'll move the A2 amendment with the exclusion of line 1.2.
Okay. Everybody understand that? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Chairs in doubt. All those in favor, raise your hand. All those opposed? Amendment is not adopted. Members, I really should ask if anybody in the audience would like to testify for or against. I forgot to do that. Maybe there is nobody, but sure. Come on, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senators. I'm Robert Washaba. I'm a veterinarian, and I currently hold the positions of professor of medicine and chairman of Department of Veterinary Clinical Sciences at the College of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Minnesota. I'm going to try to avoid, I think, revisiting all the points that we've made today. What I would say is those who go to veterinary school have already had 4 years of an undergraduate education. They've mastered the science of biology, molecular biology, and biochemistry. And then they go on to another 4 years, so that at the end of their education, they've had 8 years of training and education in veterinary medicine. Some of them even go on to 1 to 2 years of internship and residency training. So it's a group that has studied six animal species, horses, cows, sheep and goats, dog and cat. And they've spent 8 to 10 years mastering the anatomy of and the physiology of the spinal cord, the spinal nerves, and the whole innervation that goes into the muscle system, the skeletal system. That's not the case for the chiropractic medicine. They do this in one animal species, not the seven animal species that veterinarians are educated in. There are profound differences in these animal species. And extrapolating from one animal species, the human experience, to seven animal species, that doesn't hold water for veterinarians. So I think that is a key difference for me that I see, is it's without disrespect for chiropractic. I have profound respect for it. It's a great profession. But it's all about one animal species. 210 hours of training, which is 4 weeks of training, compared to 8 to 10 years of education by veterinary students, is not the same thing. So those are my comments. I'll stand or remain for questions if you have those for me.
When I ask anybody else, thank you, sir. Anybody else want to add to it? Any further discussion? Senator Kubley?
Well, Mr. Chair, I would move that Senate File 3165 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Health, Housing, and Family Security.
Senator Kubley, you should say as amended.
As amended. Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Senator Kubley moves that Senate File 3165 as amended be recommended to pass and go to the Health Care Committee. Is that right? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? So adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Koch. We'll be taking up, first bill we're going to take up is Senate File 3755, Military Affairs Persian Gulf War Ribbon Authorization Repeal. So, Senator Koch, welcome to the committee.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. I have two bills, and we'll start with Senate File 3755. I am told that this is mostly cleanup language, so I'm going to ask Colonel Allness to explain this 3755 for the committee.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Colonel Eric Allness, Department of Military Affairs. And as stated, this is really a house-cleaning bill. The legislature, in very good intent, back in 1991, passed this legislation because at the time the federal government had not authorized a federal award for participation in the Persian Gulf conflict. Subsequent to passing this, the federal government did. Now, if you look at the rest of the awards that the state gives, they're awarded to members for duty to the state. This is the sole award out there that provides an award to a federal campaign. And it's really inconsistent with what we have our award criteria. And we ask that it be cleaned up and removed so, therefore, we can recognize people with state awards for state duty, federal awards for federal duty.
Senator Murphy?
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is pretty straightforward. I would move that 3755 be recommended pass and re-referred to the Senate floor.
Any other discussion? Senator Hand, do you have your hand up?
Mr. Chairman, I just a question. I assume this has no bearing on people who have been awarded ribbons under this provision, that it wouldn't diminish or have any effect on the merit of that award. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator, in fact, there was no appropriation for the award, so there's never an award even designed for it. So it would not have any impact on individuals, correct?
That's no problem.
Mr. Chairman, can I revise my motion to put this on the consent calendar?
Okay.
I'll make that motion.
Senator Murphy moves that Senate File 3755 be recommended to pass and be placed on the consent calendar. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? So adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Shall we
Senate
File 3756? And this comes from the governor's Yellow Ribbon Task Force. What this allows for, Mr. Chair and members, is that anyone that dies while in state or federal active service would be eligible for a brevet promotion, which is an honorary promotion. But my understanding is this will speed it along. Currently, it takes 10 years. 10 years to provide this promotion. This would allow us to do it immediately, and so that for internment, they could receive that honor.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, maybe this is a question for council. I see that there's not an effective date here, and was wondering if we could just insert upon enactment. That way it would be immediate and not have to wait for August 1st.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Murphy, we can include that language to make this section effective.
Thank you very much for catching that, Senator Murphy.
I would make that motion then, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Murphy's motion, and Senate Counsel explain it to me.
Mr. Chairman, we can take care of this at the staff level, but on page 1 after line 22, just insert a line that says, with a head note effective date, it says this section is effective the day following final enactment.
Okay, does everybody understand it? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Now, what more do we need to, I think it's pretty much self-explanatory.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to move Senate Files 3756 be recommended to pass and go to general orders.
As amended.
Okay. On the work in motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. I wish
Thank
it was
you, committee.
All as easy as
I aims to please, Mr. Chair.
Must be the author. She must have
it. She's good. She's good on here. Thank you.
Senator Stephen. Senator Stephen's bill is Senate File 2449, and it's pesticide application prohibited use modifications.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Hopefully my bill will be as quick as the previous two. Senate File 2449 aims to address improperly applied pesticides. Representative Hansen from the House asked me to carry this bill after he was contacted by several constituents who were upset that commercial applicators had accidentally sprayed their lawns. So what happened, for example, was someone who lived on 6th Street instead of 6th Avenue, their house was improperly applied with pesticides. So this bill clarifies that it's a violation to spray at the wrong address. The hope is that it will encourage applicators to verify their addresses. And after I have the A2 amendment to offer.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move the A2 amendment.
And what the amendment does, Mr. Chairman and members, is it clarifies that it has some language that clarifies that it's a violation of the chapter to directly apply a pesticide, so that takes care of any concerns regarding drift, so that it would not apply to situations of drift. And additionally, we worked with some folks who had some concerns around the amendment, so that it just clarified that I think the language just clarifies our intent, which is it's supposed to apply areas that are stated in the bill. And I worked with the Department of Agriculture in addition to Representative Hansen. They can also answer any concerns. Mr. Chairman, I'd also like to say, to tell the committee that I, as I told you on the floor today, that if there are any amendments offered to this bill that aren't in to try to correct the scope of this bill, I will withdraw the bill so that this bill cannot be a rider for any additional pesticide use amendments or concerns that other members of the legislature may have.
Thank you, Senator. That gives some of us members a comfort zone.
I understand.
Now, I believe I have it.
We have to have somebody move the amendment.
I need a... Senator Scogin moved Senate file to amendment A-2 to get the bill in order that the senator would like to have.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Senator Murphy moved it.
Okay. Would you move it, Murphy?
He did.
It doesn't make any difference.
No, no, no. I'm still thinking about them dogs in that.
Oh.
It'll be okay.
I had a dog come to my place, and I'm not going to pay $750 to take him to a chiropractor, I can tell you that.
Not even
Senator,
if it's different?
Senator Murphy moves the adoption of the A-2 amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
All those in favor say aye.
I'm sorry to interrupt here, but we're just realizing that there's a little bit of a problem with the A-2 amendment. We're realizing now that Department of Agriculture drafted this, and there seems to be a problem with the way it's drafted.
Okay. Well,
so
then,
before we adopt
we're not
going
to vote on the A-2 until that gets straightened out. So, Senator Constable, maybe you could help us.
No,
or you don't, sir. You can do it. What do we need?
Mr. Chair, Paul Lemont, Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I just looked at the A-2, and I don't completely understand it, but I think it is significantly different from the amending language that was discussed with Representative Hansen, Senator Sieben, earlier. In general, and I could, with your permission, offer what I think the correct language should read.
Well, we can listen to you. I'm not too sure we're going to do it, but we'll listen.
You prefer?
Sure.
Okay. You have the original bill in front of you?
Mm-hmm. The original?
The Senate file 2449, Senator Sieben's bill.
Yep.
I thought that this, first off, the corrections were brought to our attention by some of the applicator groups that had, in years past, been given sort of exceptions. The exceptions are actually, for your information, found above on the bill itself on page 1.15C, or excuse me, 1.16, where the statute reads, except when. So those exceptions have been in law and have not been problematic for many years. With that in mind, if you will go to 2.28, the bill itself, I think it could easily and properly read in the following manner. It is a violation of this chapter to directly apply a pesticide to delete the wrong site or to, so that it reads, directly apply a pesticide to a site where an application has not been requested, comma, ordered, comma, delete the or, keep the contracted for, insert a comma, insert the word permitted, comma, and then insert the words or performed pursuant to subdivision 2, C, 2, 3, and 4 above. Then on lines 2.29, delete by the property. Line 2.30, delete owner or lawful manager of the site. Keep the comma and let it read as it stands. So it would read, it is a violation of this chapter to directly apply a pesticide to a site where an application has not been requested, ordered, contracted for, permitted, or performed pursuant to subdivision 2, C, 2, 3, and 4 above, comma, notwithstanding that the application is done in a manner consistent with the label or labeling. This essentially means that if it's applied to the wrong site, it's illegal. However, if you look on that subdivision 2C above and read down from there, you can see for mosquito control, for public health, or for invasive species, there were some exceptions made in past years.
Yep.
Senator Siebens, I know this is kind of laying something on you in the dark here, but
no, Mr. Chairman,
do you understand it?
I do understand it, and I apologize. Someone else from the Department of Ag drafted this amendment, and I didn't double-check that it was exactly what we talked about in the meeting with all the stakeholders, so I apologize for the confusion, but this is what I'm comfortable with, and I believe that everybody else is comfortable with.
Any other discussion? Everybody understand the amendment?
Are you comfortable?
I'll be voting on Senator Siebens' amendment. It was just, maybe you ought to run that by. Could you, Senator Council, just quickly?
Mr. Chairman, as I understood it, on page 2, line 28, after 2, insert directly and delete the wrong site or 2.
And 2.
And on page 2, line 29, delete or, and after 4, insert and delete by the property and insert, comma, permitted, comma, or performed pursuant to subdivision 2, paragraph C, clauses 2, 3, or 4. And then on page 2, line 30, delete everything before the comma.
Everybody understand it?
Mr. Chair, that is exactly what I intended to state to you.
We're going to be acting on Senator Siebens' amendment to the bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Now, Senator Siebens, I have a Dale Sutherland. Is he here? You come forward and...
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Dale Sutherland. I'm here wearing the hat from Minnesota Pie. We work with what we call the non-crop industry, rights of way and forestry. Originally, we had some real concerns about this language, but after working with the Department of Ag and Senator Siebens, we feel more comfortable about the language. I personally... still question the need for it, as I believe trespass laws can easily take care of these situations, but we do feel much more comfortable about the language. Thank you.
All right. Does anybody else in the audience like to speak for or against?
Mr. Chair, Paul Lemont, Department of Agriculture. I have no authority in our enforcement program to enforce trespass laws. This would become part of the pesticide control law and be enforceable under the statute.
Any other discussion? Senator Scoven.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Gimsey and I are whispering back and forth on what the penalty might be for spraying somebody else's property.
Mr. Chair, Senator, the penalties for violations of the pesticide law are contained in Chapter 18D, as in David. They have... a variety of penalties. It can be administrative, which would range from a warning letter to a suspension of a license. They can be civil penalties found in a court of law, which would be up to $7,500 per day per violation, or they could be criminal if intentionally violated. And there it could be a misdemeanor and sometimes can rise to a gross misdemeanor if it has endangered humans. So those are in statute.
Any further discussion? Senator Scogan, would you like to move the bill for?
Where would you like it to go, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Fuller.
I move that Senate File 2449 as amended be recommended to pass and be sent to the floor.
Senator Scogan moves that Senate File 2449 as amended be recommended to pass and be sent to the floor. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
One,
members.
More bill, and it's really... It's Senate File 3683. And the reason it's here today is because the House has got bills all over, and they want to have one bill. I'm trying to figure out a way to get our stuff to match the House's bills. So this is what I have to do. So it's No testimony on it, just that it's here to as a vehicle to...
It's a magnet.
Coordinate it all.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, does that mean that at a later date we'll get to add some iron filings to this magnet?
Senator Murphy, sometime I hope that this you can all kind of come together like this. I tried, but it didn't work, so this is the best we can do to get.
Okay.
But I sent bills on their own, and we maybe have to bring them back around, but because the House didn't really do that, but I thought it was only fair that we... I can't just pick on one bill not to send to the floor. I sent them all there, so then we'll figure out how to put them back into...
Okay.
So is that... Is any other discussion? Then we are adjourned.
Excellent.